Welcome to Creekside Chats with Successful Real Estate Investors, brought to you by Steve Talker Capital, promoting prosperity and harmony to help you flourish in all areas of life. Join in as we explore the motivations and goals of real estate investors and how their ability to invest abundantly has provided them with the time and freedom to contribute to the world in a creative and thoughtful way. Now please welcome your host, Dr. Allen.
Welcome back, Enlightened Investors. Dr. Allen here with Sandhya Seshadri. Enlightened Investors, you are going to be fascinated with Sandhya's inspirational journey from an $8 per week grocery budget to holding investments in thousands of apartment doors. She has an extensive background in engineering and business with success in the stock market. Sandhya brings us wisdom and tons of motivational insight. Welcome, Sandhya.
So I was born in India in a southern coastal city, Chennai, which is a big crowded city with all the population things that you see in your videos of India if you've never been there before, a very densely populated urban city. So I was definitely exposed to the wonderful pollution there, but also the music and the entertainment from around the world. And that's what first got me thinking about the Western world as far as when I grew up, where do I want to be and how do I want to position myself. So I was always inspired, and it was videos from the 80s and music from the 80s that got me. So I grew up there and came here to Dallas, Texas 30 years ago, and that's where I have lived ever since. I went to SMU, Southern Methodist University, got my EE as well as my MBA there. And actually, my MBA was paid for by the company who I worked for after my EE, which is Texas Instruments. They were kind enough to send me for an evening and weekend program. And my interest in business started because as I was working really hard as a technical engineer, loving the corporate world and all the big money, as I thought it was over there, I realized that there's always the marketing types and sales types trying to make all the decisions for us and telling us, you do this and don't do this. And then we were just going off and executing that. So I was like, I need to know how these people make their decisions and why is it that they get to control everything. So I needed my business degree for that. And then I moved on to the business side and began running projects for them. And I loved it. The corporate world was so fun. And at that time, I did not have children. I did not have anything that stopped me from hopping on a plane in a few hours that, you know, the snap of a finger, I would just go and say, okay, I'm ready to travel. Let me go. And I would travel the world and really enjoyed that lifestyle. And then when I decided to settle down and have kids, then my priorities shifted a little bit. And that's when I wanted freedom of time. I didn't want the corporate slave life that I loved until then. Didn't seem so appealing anymore, and I wanted more time with my family, etc. And that brought me to investing in the stock market full time. So when I quit my corporate career, I was able to make the same kind of income slowly through the stock market itself. And a few years ago, when our President Trump took over, and the one thing we all know and like about him is that he pays zero taxes. Right there, and this is not a political discussion. It's more to say the fact that he pays zero taxes was what made real estate appealing to me, and that's what got me into my multifamily journey right now.
Well, interesting. Now, certainly, you have been very shrewd and smart in your financial decisions, really throughout. I don't know, at least your adult life. Mm-hmm. Where did you pick that up? Where did you learn to be so intelligent about finances?
I've always loved math as a subject. And coming here as an immigrant, my food budget was about $8 a week, to give you perspective. So I was always very conscious of where every dollar was spent and how I can get the most bang for my buck. So I used to travel to Hawaii like 2-3 times a year on $200 round trip fares.
Wow.
Right? That's unimaginable. But if for $200 I could go to New York or I could go to Hawaii. So I did both. So it's just things like that. I was always careful with my spending and wanted to get the most money bang for my buck. As a value shopper, shall we say. And so the same principles took me into the stock market as well. And, you know, once you get a business degree and you start observing the stock market, you read the, you know, Wall Street Journal, you start watching reports and subscribe to magazines, et cetera, you see what happens with stocks. And then having worked in the technology sector, for so many years, I had a pretty good understanding of the market. And so initially I started out with just tech stocks because I knew those companies so well. I knew their business strategies and what would happen. And slowly I branched out to other sectors too, like the transportation sector or, you know, the financial sector and certainly the medical sector, et cetera. And that's how I built my financial acumen to invest in the stock market. And initially through small investments of options rather than buying stocks. And certainly I've made my mistakes, but I've learned from them and the mistakes got fewer and fewer. And overall, the portfolio was more up than down. So.
Well, you make it sound so simple, but I know it isn't. Well, let's go back to your childhood and think for a moment about a time that you can look back on now and you go, that really was a formative experience in my life that kind of shaped the course of my life since then.
So I grew up with parents in the medical field. They were both doctors. And all I would hear is about hospitals and medical terms that I never really understood. Versus I had these cool uncles who were either in the business sector or were engineers, and their lives always seemed more fun versus my parents were always talking about sick people and in some cases dying people, et cetera. Versus every conversation with my uncles were so interesting. I was like, I know definitely I'm not going to go into the medical field. I'm going to go do something that's way more fun and interesting. I was into gadgets, electronics. They were all far more fascinating to me. So definitely that helped me decide what I was going to do as far as my profession. But another thing that was fascinating us, like many of us in India when we grow up, we have that one relative or two relatives who are out there in the wonderful land of America. And when they come for a visit, they are the coolest relatives you can imagine, right? Because they bring you either the coolest toy or they talk about their lives and they show you pictures and it's like, wow. You mean I could go 60, 70 miles per hour on a large highway in a car? So of course the, you know, little things like that make a big impression when you're growing up. So I was like, I have to find a way to at least go for a visit to the United States and experience it for myself and see how much I would love it there, or I can always come back. But I can't just sit here wondering. So what are the ways that I can go there? That kind of helped me decide on my course of how to come to the U.S. on a visit.
Well, how did you ultimately find your way here to the United States?
So the easiest path is, you know, you go to college here, you find a way to fund it. So my parents, even though they were doctors, their combined income was about, I would say $60 a month, roughly in that range.
In U.S. funds, yeah.
In U.S. dollars back over 30 years ago. So that was the income they made. So there was no question of going to college here at $20,000 a year unless I had a scholarship. So when I realized that that was the, you know, they could give me their life savings and it wouldn't be enough at that time, that I realized, okay, I have to do really well in my exams and get high grades in school and get very good recommendations so that I can come here. And so I applied, and I was accepted to Southern Methodist University with a full ride. And that's how I was able to afford to come here. And once I was here, I mean, Texas, I love Texas. I've lived here 30 years. I can't imagine living anywhere else. Dallas is so amazing. Yes, I have drank the Kool-Aid here, but huge roads, so much land, so much space, such a large, vast space with enough room for everyone. It's as I was just in love, and I've never left since then, although I have traveled to a lot of places on vacation. So I love Dallas. So soon after I got out of, got my EE from SMU, I was hired by Texas Instruments, and the rest was history, so to speak. So, loved again Texas Instruments. What a great training institute. We call it TI as a training institute, except I never left because there were so many different opportunities within one company itself that I never had to leave to find a different job. I didn't have to switch companies to find a different role, functional role within that huge company. So it's been such a blessing being here.
Well, I have to tell you, you seem so American that I find it difficult to believe you didn't grow up here.
You'll see it in my accent every once in a while in those, depending on the words.
Yeah, sort of. But by and large, yeah, where did you, where did you pick up American English? Just from being here, or?
Well, we were ruled by the British, India. Right. So we always had to learn the English language and grammar and everything. It's just our pronunciation was a little more British when we spoke. Yeah. And our spelling was a little more British. So the word color, we would spell it with a U, things like that. And you learn that. But music, right? Pop music, pop culture, those kind of things really make us sort of united in a way. So 80s music, when video killed the radio star and all. So yes, I'm Gen X. So all of us 80s music makes you pronounce things the American accent way. So as you sing along and everything, you learn it. You watch American sitcoms. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ferris is my hero, you know. So just things like that. That's how you pick up. And then once you come here and you live here and you go to college, of course, people tease you on your accent or on something you say. But then you learn. You don't say it's not the pavement. It's the sidewalk. Things like that. And you pick that up.
Yeah, well, fascinating. Well, tell us about the most difficult thing about your transition from India to the United States.
The most difficult thing? I would probably say just living on a budget and getting used to the cultural norms. And in Texas, that's so different from, say, New Jersey or Bay Area where I have friends, or New Jersey where I had family. Getting used to the Texas culture, enjoying country music versus pop music, all the little things of fitting in. So, of course, I was a fish out of water for a while. But as I learned more and more about how things are done here, it became easier. You adapt. And I think adapting was a struggle at the beginning, but I learned a lot more once I was in the corporate world and then came back for my MBA. I was a different beast than when I just came, as I call it, FOB, or fresh off the boat to go to school, EE school at SMU.
Yeah. So after your MBA, you came with a passion, it sounds like.
And yeah, it was like seeing the world in a completely different light. It's until then you think of it as, okay, I produce something for $10. I make myself a little 20% profit and I'm going to sell this for, you know, $2 more. And hey, I made money. That's the way an engineer thinks versus a business person thinks, oh, what is the perceived value of this item? What is the replacement? What are you instead? You're coming up with a new solution instead to what they're currently using. So this is worth tenfold. You may have only spent $10 making it, but don't worry about that $10. Look at how much value you're adding to your customers. So this is at least a $100 product. And so to think like that, to think, oh my God, I'm gouging these customers. You know, how could I do this, right? This is not right. And they're like, no. Don't think of it that way. You're adding so much value to them. You're relieving them of all of this burden. Or, you know, your chip used to be, your phone used to be this big before, right? And then you're shrinking it to this. And you're doing all these functions into one little thing. So the mindset, it was a huge mindset change. Product, pricing, place, promotions, all the four P's of marketing. That's kind of just... it's a different way of viewing the world that I learned in my MBA, and being with friends who are all only from a marketing background and not an electrical engineer's background like me, and how they think and how they view the world. Oh, it opened my eyes. That was, I'd say, the biggest reckoning in my world.
Well, you certainly, I mean, I don't think you left all of that knowledge behind from engineering. It's still a part of you.
Oh, it's a big part of me.
Yeah. And, so you've taken that engineering background, that engineering mindset, and you've taken it and combined it, with marketing. Tell us about the marriage of those two things.
I think it's actually a really good fit, because the strong math background and the confidence in operating spreadsheets feeds well into the financial side of business. Mm-hmm. And for you to truly understand a business, no matter how much you read brochures and think this is a great product, when you analyze the financials, whether it's a company, it's a product or anything, that tells you the true story of the business, and whether that's in real estate or a multifamily investment for that matter, right? The financials tell you the true story. Then follow the money trail and the story will become much more obvious, whether it's COVID or it's multifamily or anything else, right? Mm-hmm. Follow the money trail. And so that is basic financial analysis feeds well for someone with a mathematical background and engineering mindset. And the engineering mindset gives you the problem solving abilities. Whatever the issue that you come across, you know, in my technical world, there is a way to solve it. So don't just choose one path. There's five different ways of solving that one problem. So same way in multifamily or in financials, there's different approaches. So how do you add to your operating income, right? You cut your expenses, but you also increase your revenue. And how do you increase that revenue? By adding value so that people are willing to pay for it. And that's where the marketing mindset comes in and the engineering mind comes in to solve the problem. But the marketer said, oh, but this is so much value, so you can charge this much for it. So the two blend really well into any situation. And it's the same thing with, you know, I have a daughter who's 18 and I'm going to send her off to college. And so I'm thinking, if all your classes end up going online, how about you just do it remotely from home, but then continue to work your job and other ways of adding to your revenue stream so that you can fund your own college in a little bit instead of seeking our assistance, right?
Yeah,
so that's where the engineering and business mindset come together.
Well, talk to us a little bit about the transition from stock market investing to real estate multifamily investing.
So the stock market was doing really well for most of us. So you don't have to be a stock market whiz to have made money from, say, 2010 to 2018 kind of time frame. Most of us did pretty well. But what happened was that each time that I made more money, I was paying more to the IRS every year. My tax bracket kept bumping and I was just writing bigger checks every April 15th. And I was like, I have to find a way to stop that. And that's where I was like, I need to find out more about real estate because people are saving a lot on taxes. I need to either have a business or get into real estate. Those are the two ways I can cut back on how much I'm shelling out to the IRS every year. And I did not want to do single family because I was under the impression that I would have to self-manage it. I would depend on the comps of that one neighborhood to dictate the value of that. I have to screen tenants, et cetera. So I didn't want to do that. So I never went into rentals. I just felt like the stock market was so much easier to just manage my account online and do my own trades. But then somebody told me about multifamily, and that's where you have a third-party property management company. If you buy a property large enough, like 80-plus units to afford it, and it's less hands-on, but you still look at the financials as often as you want and learn the metrics and you can run your own asset. So that's when I got interested. I invested passively and then I joined a mentoring program as well so I could scale up quickly instead of trying to figure everything out myself by making mistakes. I was like, okay, I need to accelerate my learning. I'm ready to take the plunge. I like this investing. And so November 2018, I joined a mentoring program, met all kinds of wonderful people, like-minded people. It was easy to speak the same language, and people within the mentoring program, we underwrite deals the same way, et cetera. It was easy to find partners, and so I ended up being able to syndicate my own deal last year because of that. So definitely I owe it to finding a lot of like-minded people in the right situation to do that.
So do you, so I guess you still are in the stock market.
Yes.
But you are gradually growing your real estate portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'll probably grow that, continue to grow that until it probably becomes your primary source of investing. We'll see though, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What time will tell there. Well, tell us a little bit about, you talked about a mentoring program. You don't need to tell us the name of the mentoring program, but what was your criteria for finding a mentoring program?
So I love Dallas. So I had to find someone who primarily focuses on the Dallas market so that I have a bigger pool of people to meet who would all be interested in investing in Dallas. Mm-hmm. So that was my easiest way to find my mentoring program and someone who's well established in Dallas so that all I had to do was mention their name and brokers would take me seriously. Tons of people have reported success stories and they all own properties here because I like at least initially when I'm new to a business, to know where my property is, drive to it, have that hands-on experience. I'm a very hands-on asset manager, so I drive to my property at least every couple of weeks. I check on things going on there. It's not enough for me to have just my weekly calls and watch the reports. I am still very hands-on, like the mom that I am with my family. I'm very hands-on with my kids in school. I don't just look at occasional report cards. I actually talk to them about, what did you learn this week? How does that affect us in the real world kind of conversation? So the same thing applies with asset management. So I needed properties in Dallas, and I needed a program that specializes or predominantly invests here.
So outside of location, what was the criteria?
Success stories, conservative underwriting. Those would be the two other biggest things. Is there was numerous people, a lot of different people who all had very positive feedback and a lot of success stories. Whether I talked to a broker or I talked to a passive investor or I talked to a syndicator, they all had very positive reviews. So, I think that was a big deal. And also the fact that once you get in, you do your own independent thing. You don't have to follow a certain way, or you're not teamed up with people. There are certain groups where if a deal comes in, they assign that deal to a particular set of people and say, okay, these people get first dibs on the deal. I didn't like a program where they would tell you that. Because right now, if a broker presents a deal, you could have five or six different groups of people from within our mentoring program bidding on the same deal. And so it's up to you to decide how you want to differentiate yourself to the seller, right? Mm. So it was like an open market, kind of like how America is, right? They don't control you and tell you this is what you can do and cannot do, except lately it seems that a little that way. But in general, right, it's free and open to all. So I like that philosophy. So you're free to partner with who you want. You're free to go after any deal you want. And if you want to raise money within the group, then make sure your underwriting is conservative. So I like all of those principles. And some of that was explained when I went to one of their weekend events, where the leader explained all of that and how they do their process. And I really liked it. And I had attended other multifamily conferences and events as well. And this one seemed the best fit for me based on what I wanted to do. So I think it's good to shop around for anyone looking to consider mentoring programs. Between the marketing, what locations you want to invest in, and does that group specialize in that? Do they have a big play in that market, I think would be one of the biggest things I would look for. But beyond that, do their values align with yours? Does the way they operate the business align with you? Those would be the other criteria in choosing one.
Very good and wise suggestions there. Sandhya, we're coming to the end of our time here.
Wow,
it goes by fast.
Yeah.
So much more to talk about. Mm-hmm. Before we go here, I have one last question, and that has to do with, well, I've just asked the one question, and that is, what is it that you miss most about India? And before you answer that, tell our viewers and listeners how they could get in touch with you.
I have a website, multifamily4you.com. So the four is number four and the U is spelled out, multifamily4you.com. That's my website, and multifamily4u@gmail.com is my email address. And if any listener wants to come to my website and put in their name and email, they can get a passive investor's checklist from there, how to vet a sponsor, how to analyze a deal, et cetera.
So, what do you miss most about home? Or
the thing
what used
I miss,
to be home?
What I miss most about India is in the fall, around the October-November timeframe, we have this big festival week, and we celebrate Diwali, which is a combination of a 4th of July fireworks and a Christmas sort of celebration. So it's several days long, and we, in fact, close off streets so that we can have fireworks on the street. And then everyone is dressed in festive clothes, all kinds of course, desserts and good food is made, and everyone mingles and exchanges food and clothing, and everyone's really happy. And I miss the festive nature of the entire community at that time. And it didn't matter whether you were practicing one religion or the other. Everyone celebrated in the fireworks and the festivities, whether or not. It's just like Christmas here, right? Everyone celebrates Christmas. Whether or not you actually go to church and believe in the religious side of it, you still exchange presents. And it's just such a festive season here. It's sort of like that, plus the fireworks of the 4th of July. I miss the celebrating Diwali in a very big way here. That's probably the only thing I miss.
The only thing you miss, huh?
Well, the biggest thing I miss, because, I mean, you can get Indian food here, you can dress up in Indian clothing here, or you can go to dance parties here or whatever else, right? Yeah. So for me, that's the one big thing that I miss, that I can't really combine both and do at the same time.
Is the India food here as good as the India food in India?
It's pretty good. You have to know your restaurants and what to order. Like certain restaurants make certain entrees really well. And then, of course, I have my recipes. Right. And I have my friends who make certain things well. So that's how you figure that out.
Enlightened investor Sandhya guides us to focus our direction based on accurate analysis guided by hope and expectation that there is always a solution. To further ignite your hope and focus your direction, go to SteveTucker.com, download a free copy of Passive Real Estate Investing, Time, Freedom to Live Abundantly.
Thank you for joining us on Creekside Chats with Successful Real Estate Investors, brought to you by Steve Tucker Capital. For more information, as well as access to our free ebook on enhancing your well-being through real estate investing, be sure to connect with us at SteveTucker.com. As part of our efforts to make the world a better place, Steve Tucker Capital contributes to activities and organizations committed to better understand the equine and enhance the humane treatment of horses worldwide. Steve Tucker Capital, working for a world where all creatures, great and small, flourish abundantly. Connect with us at SteveTucker.com.